for my series production that aired nationally in 1994. For more info about the series, visit meteorites.org. Sylvia now lives in Berkeley, California. She works as an interpreter and voiceover artist. Sadly, her mom, Irma, passed away a year ago, and her dad, Ed, passed away just 6 months before her mom. Sylvia Mullally keeps her parents' memories alive by staying in close touch with her family in Nicaragua and Mexico. I hope you enjoyed today's visit to my audio vault. If you missed any of this program, visit stageandstudio.org. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Andy Woho looks a scream. Had him on my woe. Andy Woho, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is contemporary realist painter Sherry Wolf. Her show Memento is on now at Russo Lee Gallery through July 31st. Doors open, no appointment necessary. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus, Sherry.
Thank you for having me.
We're doing this by Zoom, and you are at the coast where you have a studio. Just tell us a bit about where you are and what you do there.
Well, I am fortunate that I've been able to have a second little studio here in Manzanita. And I've been coming here for about 30 years. I just love it. It's a beautiful environment, and I am very, very fortunate that I can be here at this time. I can't do all my largest paintings here in the studio I have, but I have plenty I can do here. So it's great.
So
yeah.
In several of the paintings, many of your paintings have a backdrop of another painting, like a famous painting, but some of them have a backdrop of the ocean and mossy trees. So presumably you're painting in Portland and at the coast.
Well, yes, a lot of these paintings in my exhibition were done in Portland, partly because of the size, and they are bigger pieces than I would want to do here in my studio. And the content, the images in the paintings derive from some still lives that I've set up in my Portland studio. And then some of them I've set up here at the beach. So the ones you see with the water and the tree backgrounds are set up here at the beach. Mm-hmm. Probably last summer I set them up. And I can actually work on those either in Portland or here. It doesn't really matter once I've taken photographs for the still lives. But it is interesting that I set them up using more natural light when I'm here at the coast, because the light is so beautiful here.
Oh, yeah.
I have such a great backdrop that
what is the light like?
Well, as you can see in some of the paintings, it's very dappled and brilliant, and the colors seem to be, I don't know, sometimes they look like they're coming through a prism. They're just so intensely rich, reflected on the water. And the late afternoon sunlight in the summer tends to be very bright.
Mm-hmm. So the first painting I wanted to talk about is called Golden Still Life with Bierstadt. Still life where you use a lot of gold pieces like a coffee pot and flatware. It's very shimmery, very, very reflective. And then the background is a famous painting by Bierstadt. So Tell us about the background first.
Well, I started, I'm trying to think how many years ago, probably 15 years ago, using American landscapes by American Hudson River painters, of which Bierstadt was one of them. He was a German immigrant, but he was one of the primary Hudson River painters. And they painted what they kind of imagined the natural environment to be like. They might have made some quick sketches and occasionally some photographs, but their paintings aren't, you know, probably very accurate. Mm-hmm. They're idealized views.
Mm-hmm. And Are they romantic?
They're very romantic, and I like that because, well, nobody really knows what things look like at a certain place in time, and I wanted to take the viewer back into another kind of illusionary world. So I use those paintings as a way of you know, making the space really take you back into another place. And it also makes you move around the objects in my still lives to get there. And it kind of monumentalizes the objects in the still life. So that was how I started doing these, with a really traditional form of composition, which is derives from the trompe l'oeil technique of putting everything on a shelf. And you see everything in its entirety. Nothing is cropped, but it's kind of a foreground, middle ground, background space, and you feel like you can pick up those objects, like they're right there. So that helps create the illusion of reality.
When you set this up to take the photo, did you use a life-size painting for the backdrop? And just sort of prop it up?
Yes, I do. I collect often museum posters and reproductions of paintings that are large so that I can photograph them as they would be together, because I need to see like where the wine flute extends up over the water. You have to see what it's going to look like reflected through the glass.
So the objects, you're known for picking difficult objects to paint. So drapery, velvet, silk. Then you do very, very reflective curved objects. Like, I mean, you've got a gold coffee cup, which has a shiny inside.
Doing
lots of crazy reflections. There's a silver tumbler with one tulip in it. Bowl of cherries, so they're refracted. And reflected, and you've got a sort of little army of gold forks pointing away from the viewer, and then the kind of a surrealism of just a single cherry in a cup that seems to be high up the side of the cup. So tell us about the way you select objects and then the way you arrange them in this painting.
I was trying to imagine how could you pick objects that aren't hard to paint? They're all hard to paint.
You can tell I'm not a painter.
Well, you know, but people are always saying what you said, which is, oh, how do you paint glass, or how do you paint shiny? How do you do that? I mean, it's just like anything else. You really look at it.
Yeah.
And because I photograph things, I have very close-up views from a single perspective, and that really helps. And when I photograph them, I take multiple exposures and multiple focuses. So I focus at different distances. So I'm combining focuses within one image, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I really use a resource of many photographs, and I take a lot of liberties too, but so I select things probably because, not to impress people, but because I like the way reflections bring in another world outside of the setup. Like, you see my studio in the coffee pot, and that's bringing It's another way of like the landscape's taking you into another world, but a reflection is also bringing in another world. It's telling you there's another world around there. So that is fascinating to me. Expands my horizons greatly.
Yeah. Do we see the camera? Should I assume anything black?
Well, you might occasionally. I can't remember if I blow that up, if I can see. You might see a shadow of me with the tripod sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so luster, silver, glass, all of that is a pretty traditional, if you think of the Dutch masters painting. Mm-hmm. I suppose they did that because it was impressive to people that you could do it. And before photography, I'm sure people were even more impressed that you could paint glass.
Could you do one of these live, you know, just without a photo, without a camera?
I started that way, yes. Yeah. I can do it. It can be done.
But it must be more time consuming, right?
Extremely, extremely time consuming for me. I mean, unless you do some people are, you know, like you think of someone like Singer Sargent, the painter, the British painter, who could just capture a likeness just like that with a few brush strokes. Mm-hmm. And he was a master of, you know, that kind of visual recognition and simplification. But that isn't my style of painting. So even if I, no matter how good I was at it, it would still take a long time to do these freehand. And they take a very long time with photographs. It would be, but when I started out, I didn't use photography and I drew them. And it was, you know, I enjoyed it. But then as I started doing things like flowers and the flowers were wilting on me, I thought, well, this is crazy. I'll just take a picture of it.
So when you got the photos together for this, how long did it take to execute the painting?
Well, that's a big question because I work on the whole show at the same time. These paintings took me a year and I work, you know, 6 or 7 days a week. All I can say is they take a really long time. A lot of brush strokes and 12, 40 years of experience.
That's 12 in this show, right?
Yeah.
So it's a year. Would you call it a year's work or you've been doing other stuff?
Well, I've been doing other stuff, but like if you look at the biggest paintings in the show, I'm sure I couldn't do one of my big paintings in less than a month of solid work. Does that help give you a time reference? Yeah.
There's a pair of pictures sort of similar. One's called Victor, one's called His Master's Voice.
It's,
you know, the dog from the old record label. But he's in a different setting. He's looking at fruits and flowers and postcards and shiny objects.
Tell
us a bit about that, because again, it's one of the with an ocean background.
Yes, it is. The light is very magical, I think, and brilliant, and maybe more. I feel like it has just a whole different touch and sense of light than my interior still lives, where I light them with artificial light, which is what I do mostly in Portland. But when I bring them here, I just love the natural light. So it gives them a little more atmosphere, I think. And it's a less solid flatness. I don't know how to explain that. Mm-hmm. They sort of have a dancing light that is softer and more atmospheric that I like. And Victor, I was going to say something about the title of the show being Memento. Victor is a family heirloom that my brother had and I inherited. And he's come up in several of my paintings. And the title for the show being Memento was about how objects bring us a lot of personal history, you know? We all have a history with objects. And so when I put together objects, they're going to mean different things to me than other people, you know.
Is Victor a ceramic dog or a real dog?
It's a kind of an old, I don't know what it's made of. It's kind of that old plastic they used to use. And he's filled with a sand because there's a tiny hole under one of his feet, and I get sand on the table that it's sitting on.
What was it? Put him in your house or something by the fire?
Oh, yeah, he's sitting right here right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's great. It was the RCA mascot for RCA Victor Records.
Yeah.
So my brother was a record collector, and so that was probably, I don't know how old it is, maybe it's from the 30s or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I started borrowing objects because, you know, I have a limit of how many objects I want to own or keep around myself. So I started borrowing things, and I didn't mention that when we were talking about the gold luster painting, all of those objects were borrowed from a friend, and they were all family pieces that she grew up with, the gold, silver, flatware. And so, you know, it had a lot of personal meaning to her. We all bring something to our interpretations, you know, based on our personal histories.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sherry Wolf. Her show Memento is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery through July 31st. No appointment necessary. Sherry, the Lady of Shalott with dahlias is another painting that's use a lot of art history postcards. Just tell us about the art that you've scattered through this piece.
I have a very large collection of art history in books and cards and posters, and I usually start pulling them together for visual reasons, I would say. If the fruit is looking good and the dahlias are in bloom, I might think about certain colors and certain shapes that I think will look good together. So I don't necessarily think about telling a story that's narrative in all my paintings. There's another painting in the show I could talk about that has a little more narrative content, but I think they tell stories, but I think it's intuitive. I usually figure out the story after I put them together.
Mm-hmm.
That makes any sense. But The Lady of Shalott is a painting that is one of the Pre-Raphaelites. And growing up, I think we had a poster of that painting somewhere in the house. And I think it's a really lovely painting. And, you know, it does make me think about art history and the role women have played in art history and how they've been depicted. That seems to be a theme I come to back to again and again, is just looking at the roles that women play in the world.
All the postcards and images are of women. There's a Vermeer, Poussin, Velasquez.
Yes.
Do you just collect them anyway, or do you go out and look for them and buy the postcard?
Well, whenever I have a opportunity to go to a great museum, I buy up all the cards and posters that I can find. That's pretty much what I've been doing forever, my whole life. When I was a student, I traveled in Europe and went to all the museums, and I have little books and pamphlets that I bought then.
That I keep around, you know. You saved your Tate brochure from the...
I might have. If it had a picture in it, the reproductions weren't very good back then. That's the thing. Old art books are kind of quaint, but they don't have great color, you know?
Mm.
So I have a lot of art books that I've sadly cut up to use the reproductions from. Sometimes I buy another copy, but usually you find these books on remainder book sites. You can find lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
And posters are places you can buy them. But, you know, and it's always a memento to me to have these cards from the museums of paintings that I saw. And so I'm a victim of what they choose to publish as a reproduction, you might say.
Yeah.
I don't tend to make them up.
The painting, there's another painting called Susanna and the Elders, which is, it's got a lot of red drapery and vases, not much fruit. Then I see a pear. And
there's a pear like that's unwrapped and wrapped.
Is that what the thing on the front is? A wrapped pear in gold?
That is a wrapped, you know those beautiful Harry and David boxes of pears?
Yeah.
I bought one at Trader Joe's, and they were in these absolutely gorgeous gold wrappers. So I thought that was a really wonderful, I don't know, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I just thought it was somehow going to work with Susanna and the Elders.
Really?
Because she's naked, and there's the unwrapped pear and the wrapped pear.
She, hang on, she's in naked. She's got her clothes on.
She's behind the glass there, where the feather is, and the woman behind the glass is Susanna. You know, the biblical story of Susanna and the Elders. It's used again and again. And this painting in the book is by Artemisia Gentileschi. Mm-hmm. And she painted these stories in a slightly different way. She gave the women a little more power, I think. And it's a classic story of the men leering over her, and she's very vulnerable to them. So there was something about the wrapped and the unwrapped pair that I thought was interesting narratively. And then in the content, you know, you can move around and you can find the other card behind a couple of vases is by Latour, the woman sitting there with a candlelight. And then to the left of her is another card of a painting of a African, it's by Marie Benoist, and she's a French painter, and it's a really beautiful portrait of a woman, a Black woman, who just, you don't find very often in art history, a classical painting of a Black woman.
She's got her breast exposed, she has a white cloth around her waist, and then a white turban.
Yeah, but it's an unusual painting, I think. It's very beautiful. So again, I'm just showing women in different ways, but then the emotion of that big, the woman with her hand up, is a very large close-up of a painting by Caravaggio, and the women are pleading and weeping, and, you know, this is often what women are doing in art history.
So with this one, you feel you put a bit of extra narrative into it, perhaps?
Pardon?
Do you feel the narrative is stronger in this painting than
I feel that in this painting, I was pretty deliberate about it, more deliberate about the content, yes, the narrative, and it's stronger. I think it's strong. Just putting that red drape in there, I really wanted to do a red painting because red is just so powerful. Mm-hmm. And that undulating satin, you know, is like blood. It's like, it just takes me to a lot of different emotional states. And I wanted to see if I could do something really strong. Yeah.
And why did you pick also, you've got blue drapery and black.
Well, it's nice to have some contrast of color. The blue was something I put in, I actually made it reflected in, it's a mirror reflecting that blue drapery.
Oh, okay, that's a mirror we're looking at.
That is a mirror, yeah. And it's just another way of making a shape that I think is complementary to the composition. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of, almost cubist, you know, a lot of angles in it that move around. It's very non-traditional, I think.
Yeah. The book seems to be off the edge of the table. Like the foreground is a kind of black void.
Yes.
It's hard to know where the surface ends.
Well, it's hanging out there. It's very precariously balancing on the edge of the tabletop. The tabletop even has two different platforms, so it's not all on one. It's not all on the same surface.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I think that's okay. I really wanted it to be sort of topsy-turvy and disquieting rather than very sometimes you want things to be really quiet or stable or comforting, and sometimes you compositionally want to really shake things up, so you put a lot of dynamic diagonals and things in the composition which have an emotional charge.
It does. It feels chaotic. And then when you look at the two big paintings, the one by the window is called Histories. It's a long kind of panoramic shape. Everything's arranged on white silk. And the other one, which is kind of the key, it's called Memento, the name of the show. It's more kind of busy, I'd say.
I think they're both pretty busy.
Well, just tell us about Memento, because you did have a period where you went to like Paris flea markets and shop.
Yeah, I did.
Paintings.
My last show was from what I called found still lives, where I took photos out in the world of antique malls and such. So this has, this has some of that feeling. I think that's a good perception. And some of the objects were from flea markets for sure. So I just started in this painting, I started with that blue drape because I just thought it was like the ocean. It was like water. It just, you know, it just had a feeling. And then that's probably why I put the big ship on the right at the top.
The moonlit.
It reminded me of the ocean. And, so again, I really kind of wanted a topsy-turvy, disquieting kind of composition that would make you, force you to move around a lot and look at everything and not really be able to settle in anywhere, you know, and get comfortable. But I think it's another way of being engaging to the viewer. And also, I felt this composition was more abstract because it doesn't have a traditional foreground, middle ground, background kind of, you know.
And it doesn't help that you threw in a cubic mirror.
Oh, yes. The mirror up there really throws you off, huh?
So, you know, like one person's memento is another person's tat, something that they just want to get out of the house. What was your approach?
Exactly.
What's your approach to other people's mementos? And what are you like in real life? Are you a minimalist around your house?
Well, that's funny because at the beach, I'm a minimalist. I love the view of the ocean so much. I just want the house to be really quiet and peaceful and white. Except I have art. I love my art and it's colorful. But I go back and forth. I loved objects so much that I do keep, in Portland more so, I keep a lot of objects of beauty around me that I've collected. It's a little more chaotic.
Yeah. I guess beauty is your... You know, it has to be a beautiful thing for you to keep, right? And to include in it.
What I think of as beautiful, not to say lots of things are beautiful, but a quality that I think is nice. I mean, if you certainly you can arrange anything to look beautiful as an arrangement, but
this is New Seasons quality fruit I'm looking at.
Yeah.
This is a good
thing. Always, it's like putting a bowl of fruit on a table that's beautiful. It could be a bowl of vegetables, anything. It's just like putting on a vase of flowers, you know?
Yeah.
It lights up the room.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was contemporary realist painter Sherry Wolfe. Her show Memento is on now at Russo Lee Gallery in Northwest Portland through July 31st, and it's not appointment only, it's regular hours. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus, Sherry.
Well, thank you so much. My pleasure to be here.
When you wake up on the sea, be sure to think of me and you. to think about paint and to think about glue. What a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland. Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Esta es una sección especial en español en respuesta a la emergencia